The theme of this year's conference is When the Cradle Does Not Hold, and it looks at violence in children and working with a violent child, parental indulgence, relationships between analysis and literature and film. And joining me are this year's keynotes. Judith Jackson is from the UK. She's a fellow at the Institute of Psychoanalysis, teaches at the Tavistock Clinic and at the Institute, and is involved in the training of child psychoanalysts. Judith's on the blower from London. Good to have you, Judith. And joining me in the Sydney studio is John McLean. John is president of the Australian Psychoanalytical Society and a training and supervising analyst, and he's interested in using film and literature as vehicles for that training, in much the same way, I guess, that Freud used dreams. And I welcome you both to our little wireless program. Judith, thinking back on my childhood, which I must say was over 60 years ago, I remember that even the worst of us weren't as violent as the fair average quality violence that I observe in children today. Is that a false observation, or are kids more violent now than they used to be?
I'm not sure if they're more violent than they used to be. I think that perhaps we're more conscious of the consequences of letting it develop in an untrammeled way, so that what you get are gangs and the power of gangs that can make for a huge threat. I think we all have violent feelings inside us, but we hopefully can contain them, or they can be expressed in games and other competitive ways.
Well, containment is one of your issues, isn't it? And you make the point that maybe parents have a harder time these days. They both are working, mortgages, lack of support, extended families aren't perhaps quite as functional as they used to be.
Well, I think there is much more of a breakdown of family life, and even, you know, the containment within community life and the importance of religion, that's all gone to a large extent. I think what we see is that schools have to play a very important part in containing the developing child, and teachers aren't often really helped. They're trained in teaching curriculum, but they're not always trained in understanding the emotional development of children.
When I think back to the aforementioned childhood, we had no television. We might see one film a week maximum when we went to a matinee. And so what we were doing, we were out and about. We were playing quite energetic physical games around a pretty innocent landscape. We weren't glued to the telly and the internet and computer games. Surely that's also a factor, that the kids are containing themselves.
Well, are they containing themselves, or are they... I feel very concerned about the addiction to the internet and the addiction to violent war games and these internet violent games that in a way take over the inner life of a child very often. I mean, adolescents can spend hours on the internet every day. And that, I think, is of considerable concern.
Judith, how does psychoanalysis work with children? Clearly, it would be a very different procedure than with adults. How do you treat a violent child?
Well, when you work with children, you use all their communications, but particularly a child's capacity to play. You provide them with material to play with, you know, set up a doll family, bricks, cars, all sorts of play objects that would allow for some imaginative and free use of the time. so that one doesn't expect them just to sit and talk to you. They would draw sometimes. More capable children would use drawings. And they would play, they would use the whole room, really. A room can become a battlefield in a way. They would use the furniture of the room. They use sometimes the figure of the analyst, him or herself. And you, through the communication, very much like you would be looking at dream and the free associations of an adult.
Mm. Well, clearly constraining a child on a couch isn't going to work. John, your particular interest, and I find this so interesting, is that between psychoanalysis and literature and film. Broad brush it, please.
I think, as Judith was saying, that the equivalent of play for children is dreams in adults, and I think whatever the realistic or external realities of a film might be, it also touches on inner realities and psychological realities, unconscious realities, just as dreams do. So one of my favourite quotes that illuminated this for me was from Kenneth Clarke, that art springs from those experiences that we sense are so important that they demand elaboration. We do it through dreaming at night time, we do it through literature, plays, and films do the same. They try to help us think about emotional experience.
Does mass-produced film work as well in this regard as say the subtleties of the art film?
There's more chance, I suppose, for an art film to touch on these things if there's a bit more of the writer or the director's direct input. But I haven't noticed that. I mean, I find the number of films lend themselves to being used in this way to help us think about these emotional issues.
Well, let's look at one film that I know you're interested in and that you'll be discussing at the conference, the Anna Kokkinos's Blessed. Hmm. Why? What makes that a good film for your purposes?
It looks at the child's perspective of these seven lost children in the course of 24 hours and then the parents' perspective, and it doesn't give us any causal explanations. We don't get history. We just see what's happening. And it shows us, I think, a real breakdown between a parent and child. In no instance is there a couple together. There's a great overinvestment on the part of the mothers in their children. They're blessings, but it's very ironic.
This is an Australian film. Does that make it more appropriate as a form of dreaming for an Australian patient?
No, I don't think so. I think it touches on universals. That's the beauty of the film. These issues of a very early relation between parent and child touch on really deep universal matters.
Another film you'd use is Lars and the Real Girl, and that's a comedy about a shy bloke in a small town who brings home the girl of his dreams, who isn't real but a sex doll.
That's right, to the horror and dismay of his brother and wife.
As it would.
Indeed, and to their little community. But slowly as the film unfolds, we and they begin to realise that this doll is certainly not a sex doll. She comes to represent a great deal in the life of this young man and leads us right back to the fact that his mother died in childbirth and was all frozen over.
So it gets the juices flowing in a clinical sense.
It gets the juices flowing, it gets the meanings and the associations flowing, and it opens up these frozen things that were affecting him in a very moving way.
Well, John, that shouldn't surprise us. It's always been painfully obvious to me that films are not primarily for watching, they're for talking about.
Yeah.
And most of the cultural activity in a city like this, or indeed in Judith's city, is triggered by discussions of a Woody Allen film or the significance of the latest 3D epic by James Cameron.
Absolutely. And I find the most valuable thing about using films is to watch it together in a group so that everybody's deeply involved in experiencing and then talk together about the experience in exactly that way.
Judith, one of the things you'll be discussing at the conference is how the threat of violence impacts on the analyst. Explain the problem.
Well, one thing about being threatened by somebody violent is that you lose your capacity to think very easily. You're threatened. And it also then makes you become defensive, or you're threatened for your safety, or you're anxious not to be hurt. And of course, one of the main functions of the analyst is to try and process what's going on in yourself, not only what's going on in the child, the patient, adult or child, and it's working out in what way you're reacting that allows you to have access to the inner experience of the child, because it's impacting on you as though in a way as though you are, as it were, the child under threat too. Now that, of course, is you're when you're working with very disturbed children, you're working under fire, as it were, and that's terribly difficult to do.
Well, of course, some parents can't handle it either. So what they attempt to do is indulge the child. And I know that's also a part of your argument at the conference. We're talking about what? Parents who can't say no, that can't deal with complaints or let alone outcries of kids.
Well, they become, the child then becomes the boss, one might say, what is sort of, and it can actually tyrannize over the whole household. What we're talking about is that parents, we all, in a way, we all want to be loved. What we don't want to be is hated. And the moment you say no to a child, it stirs up anger and hatred and unpleasant reactions. And parents, some parents find that terribly difficult to manage.
Which means that you have to effectively deal with parental psychological problems every bit as much or even more than the notional child patient?
You do have to work with the parent's difficulty in saying no, and that's, you know, not as easy as a parent just sort of acknowledging it. They are governed by their own history and their own difficulties, and their difficulties in being firm and setting limits and having a capacity to withstand the onslaught of a determined bullying child. Is often much more difficult for parents who themselves have gone through either, for instance, difficulties of being harshly dealt with by a parent, so therefore they bend over backwards to be a loving parent, or where they themselves have not had a firm parent and find it difficult to know what to do. They so much want to be the good parent, and that sort of dominates their thinking.
John, having been born during the Second World War and growing up, or my early childhood during the Cold War, I became fascinated with science fiction movies where you could see in any superficial analysis of, say, Japan's Godzilla, a metaphor for Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Mm. You could see the fear of the Cold War in film after film about UFOs, and then suddenly you get a completely different change of the zeitgeist with Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where it becomes benevolent. How do you find films like that useful, or are they too generic?
No, that's exactly right, and it's the metaphor that gets us to the inside story. It's in those very, as you say, the Godzilla picture is very much a metaphor for these fears or omnipotence run wild. And even in less obvious films, like the ones we've just mentioned, it's the metaphor, what the characters stand for in a way, that start to illuminate it. Like in Blessed, for example, just to take up what Judith was saying, it illustrates various ways in which the mothers cannot see their children as children needing help to develop. The parents have they are like children themselves, and there's a reversal of the roles, and the children then are in a sense allowed to run wild because of the way they're seen by the parents.
A final question to you, John. Did the sainted Sigmund go to the movies?
That I can't answer.
I've never heard of him rushing off to the matinee in Vienna.
I don't think he was fond of them, but please, I can say don't quote me. It's a bit hard on Radio National, isn't it?
Look, thank you both very much. It is a tradition that we always talk about the Freud Conference, just as we always talk to winners of the Templeton Prize. In case in point, John McLean, President of the Australian Psychoanalytical Society and a training and supervising analyst. John is going to train and supervise me. He doesn't know that, but I've just told him. And Judith Jackson, a child and adult analyst and a fellow of the Institute of Psychoanalysis in the UK. They're the keynote speakers at this year's Freud Conference, being held on Saturday, the 21st of May, at the Tracy Centre, 126 The Avenue, Parkville in Melbourne. It runs from 8:30 a.m. until 5. We'll put all the details of the conference on our website at abc.net.au/rn/late-night-live. Coming up, we're going back to Sigmund City, and we're going to rescue Viennese art from the Nazis.